As one, and with reluctant grunts, the warrior sank onto their left knees, laying weapons at their sides. Steadying herself with a hand on Maddox's shoulder, Yvonne began to lower herself, but was dragged down to sit on his thickly muscled thigh.
"Bowed head is enough. If it is Vela, she will know you mean no disrespect,"
Maddox growled softly when Yvonne pushed against him.
"And if she demands that you kneel on your shattered joint, she will earn that disrespect."
Yvonne would bear the pain, yet she would not argue with him now. The goddess took a step in their direction. The next moment, Vela stood in front of Keeler. Startled by the quick movement, the warrior flinched and went utterly still. Maddox's muscles became steel, as did Ardal's, Yvonne saw, as each of the warriors battled their instinctive response to defend against attack.
"And so I faced the head of the dragon."
The goddess's voice held the ring of cold steel against stone.
"But you do not bow that head to me."
Kneeling before her, the big warrior trembled, yet there was no wavering in his reply.
"A dragon with bowed head cannot see threat coming and would fail in his duty to protect his Ran."
"You believe I am a danger to him?"
"I know not your intention, that is why I keep eyes up and watch."
"And if I threatened your Ran, you would raise your axe against me?"
"I would, my lady, as is my duty."
His scarred face was bloodbare as he spoke that truth.
"Forgive me."
"Forgive what? Your loyalty and your courage serve you well, Keeler."
"Thank you, merciful lady."
"So too the dragon's claw is loyal and courageous, and has blood that burns like fire."
On silent steps she glided past Ardal, her glowing fingers drifting lightly over the warrior's braided hair.
"Ardal, the last of your clan, whose memory you carry upon your face, always you have feared that letting yourself fully belong to those who raised you and loved you would mean your own family would vanish from memory. But even as you belong to those you love, so they belong to you, and through the family you build, your clan will be renewed."
A choked sob came from that warrior, who only nodded beneath the goddess's touch. Vela moved on into the circle of the dragon guard's protection toward Facade.
"And the dragon's fangs?"
Through the veil, Yvonne saw the curve of pale lips and shining teeth, the sickle moon of a smile. Down on her heels she sank, the billowing of her robes bringing icy wind to Yvonne's face. Yet there was warmth in the goddess's voice as she scratched steel's ears, then bones rough.
"I have always favored wolves."
"Yes, my lady,"
the warrior replied, his voice thick.
"I have too."
"As they favor you, Facade," she said. "Had they been mistreated, I would feed you to them."
"Had I mistreated them, I would cut off chunks of my own flesh for you to give them."
Smiling, she touched his cheek and rose again. The seat of Maddox's thigh shifted as he pivoted, keeping the goddess in view as she glided around behind them, where Danon knelt with bowed head.
"And here is the dragon's tail, which holds deadly sting."
With a finger beneath the warrior's chin, Vela raised Danon's gaze to meet hers.
"Born of cursed rape, as were my children, justice and law, even from pain, sometimes beauty emerges. Your rage is beauty. Your courage is beauty. Your compassion is beauty. Perhaps your mother will never have heart to see it, but all who know you do."
A queen did not cry when there was someone to see her tears, yet Yvonne's vision blurred then, and the goddess was but a shining star as she continued on. Swiping her eyes, Yvonne watched her stop in front of a silently weeping Bannock.
"Bannock, my beloved, who serves as the dragon's golden scales, as armor and shield," she said quietly. "You have never worn the red cloak or quested for me. But so faithful you have been, and you have received so little for it. What would you ask of me?"
The old warrior's reply was thick.
"Only to never again see anyone suffer at the destroyer's hands."
Amusement swept through Vela's cold voice like a summer wind.
"You ask me to blind you?"
A rusty laugh shook from him.
"No, my lady. Is it too much?"
"Only too much to accomplish alone, but I will do all that I can to grant that request, warrior. I vow to you."
"You do me great honor, my lady."
"No."
Sadness filled the denial.
"It is you who has honored me these many years. Serve well as the dragon's armor, faithful one, and be shield to his bride."
"That is my vow to you."
Her hand cupped his tear-stained cheek for a moment before she turned away. Shaking and trembling, Torek watched her approach, his face lifted in helpless wonder. She stopped before him.
"My brother's poison resides within you."
Vela's brother, Stranek, the serpent god, Yvain had not truly needed confirmation that her own brother had called upon Stranek to give him power. Yet now that confirmation made her throat close and her chest burn, for it meant Ezel had used blood sacrifice to gain those foul magics.
"I am still healing, my lady," he said, in a voice uncertain whether he should be sorry for not being well or to boast that he was recovering.
"Your injury is," she agreed, then lowered her veiled lips to his.
Yvain could not see if there was a kiss through the silk, only heard Vela's murmur.
"You are the dragon's wings. Tell me, how far will they take you?"
"Never far from my duty, my lady," was his passionate reply. "I swear it."
"Do not make vows you cannot keep, young warrior."
She sighed against his lips and Torek's breath frosted against hers.
"You will fly so far that you will no longer be yourself when you return."
Confusion furrowed his brow.
"Who will I be?"
"Still the dragon's wings, perhaps, or perhaps also the head and the claws, the teeth and sting and the scales."
"And the burning heart?"
Vela laughed.
"Do you wish to have it all, or will you let another be the heart?"
"What is best?"
"If I tell you the answer now," she said in a voice still ringing with her laughter, "then you would learn nothing from your quest."
"My mother did not stick my hand in a fire to teach me it would burn. Instead, she told me it was hot and I learned well enough."
"That is how a child learns, young Torek."
All amusement bled from her voice.
"Do you want to be a child or a man?"
His face flamed red.
"A man."
"Then be at ease. Already you learn quickly, and you are not the only one taking lessons."
Straightening, she faced Matic and Yvain.
"So grudgingly kneels the warrior who is not yet a king."
Matic's hardened jaw unclenched.
"My bride will forge me into one."
"A king is not forged as a sword is, from fire and steel. That is a warrior's way of seeing."
"I am a warrior still,"
Matic admitted gruffly.
"So you are, and also more. A warrior who is already the burning heart of a dragon."
Her gaze shifted to Yvain.
"And you are a queen who does not yet sit on a throne, except for the throne this warrior provides for you now, made of his own flesh and blood and bone."
Upon Matic's thigh.
"Would you have me kneel, my lady?"
She held out her hand.
"I would have you rise, daughter."
Her fingers were icy and hard as stone when Yvain took them, but the goddess did not help Yvain to her feet. Instead, Matic slipped his arm beneath her knees and stood, his forearm braced against her back as he held her in a seat made of his embrace, still serving as her throne of his flesh and blood and rising with her, though the goddess had not instructed him to. For the first time since the goddess had appeared, fear slipped into Yvain's veins. Vela was merciful and generous, but could be vain and cruel, and she had little patience for the arrogance of men. Yet his arrogance had also lifted Yvain, so she knew not how the goddess would respond to it.
That sickle moon smile curved Vela's lips again, but there was a sharper edge to it.
"This is the one you've chosen, daughter?"
"He is."
"You are brave or foolish?"
"I prefer brave."
"As you will need to be."
Her gaze held Yvain so easily.
"I have a task for you."
Unease clutched her chest.
A quest?
Which she would accept, because those who quested for Vela received great reward, such as power to defeat sorcerers or strength enough to free a people. Yet those quests also took them on a journey from all they knew.
"Nothing so easy as a quest," the goddess said, and Yvain's chest clutched even tighter.
Nothing so easy? Everyone who quested for Vela faced pain and doubt at the edge of their enduring.
"And I would not see you so lonely again."
"She would not be alone."
Matic's grip had tightened on her.
"What is the task?"
Such coldness filled Vela's gaze that Yvain's heart seemed as ice.
"Do not speak to me unbidden, warrior, as you would take the tongue of my chosen for speaking what you do not wish to hear, so I would take yours. And I know not how you will be ran and speak for all of your people if I do."
His jaw became as stone, but his burning eyes asked the same question. Vela turned an exasperated gaze on Yvain.
"If you wished to lie beneath a man and be used as a vessel, you could have married your father's choice."
Tola's selfish lech of a king, who would never have helped her secure her throne or have intention of killing her father.
"This is not the same."
As Vela must know, for through Yvain's eyes the goddess had seen all that had been done and spoken between her and Matic. So now the goddess only poked at her would-be husband, perhaps testing him. Yvain was unsure of the purpose.
"And he also sees to my pleasure. Because his warrior's heart perceives you as a walled city to be conquered. When you open to him, When you writhe in his arms, he believes you are defeated.
All of this Yvain already suspected by the way he'd been so content of late, ever since the night by Hanan's pool, secure in his role and purpose and comfortable in it, and the warrior's role was the one he best knew. Yet Matic responded as if these were secret battle plans revealed. Tighter and tighter he held her.
Your mother advised you against him. Will you not seek one of her chosen suitors instead? You would not have to journey far. One resides in this city.
Matic said not a word, but such hot denial was in his face and in the growl rumbling from his chest, not a word was needed.
Though I value my mother's wisdom and counsel, I have chosen Matic,
Yvain told the goddess, though her response was for the warrior who held her.
I have filled my sheath with his seed.
So I have seen, said Vela wryly, many times.
And so she knew Yvain's purpose.
Have we been blessed by Hanan?
Not as yet,
the goddess replied, and pain stabbed through Yvain's chest. She had hoped, she had hoped that in the palm of the god's hand, Matic's seed would take root, that by the time they reached the burning plains, they might be certain she was with child.
You shed no tears, though I know your heart aches,
Vela said softly, cupping Yvain's cheeks in cold iron hands.
But understand, my daughter, if you choose him, you will know much greater suffering than this.
Matic stiffened against Yvain. Dread seized Yvain's heart. Suffering.
How?
At your father's hand.
A fierce volcanic sound erupted from Matic, as if denial exploded within him and stopped at his lips, yet still burst through his eyes and his skin and the tightness of his grip. With bared teeth, he took a step back from the goddess, as if distance would be an escape from the fate Vela had seen. Yet Yvain knew there would be no escape.
And if I choose another suitor?
Her shining gaze on Matic's face, Vela said,
you will not know so much pain.
What of my people? Her own pain mattered less than theirs.
What of them?
Will they be freed? Will my father die? Will choosing another suitor make both outcomes more likely? Yvain was not a goddess, but she already knew the answer to that. She had already told Matic the answer to it.
It is not certain that this warrior will prevail.
But is it more likely?
Even my eyes cannot see everything,
Vela said with a narrowing gaze. Twice the goddess had evaded the answer of what was more likely, which was answer enough.
Then I will choose the suffering,
Yvain said with quiet resolve, but Matic shook his head. Pain slipped through her heart again.
You think I should choose another suitor?
Savagery flared anew in his eyes. On a snarl, he unclenched his jaw as if to speak. Yvain clapped her hand over his opening mouth.
Vela will not be merciful, warrior, she hissed, and I am fond of your tongue.
His gaze shot to hers, his features a dark mask of fury and frustration.
I still hear him well enough, the goddess said. He vows to protect you.
He would try, Yvain knew, and that knowing lifted her heart, because when facing inevitability, trying was the most one might hope for.
I have allied myself with you so that we might kill my father and take my throne, she told him.
Perhaps then you did not trust my word, but with Vela as my witness, I vow that I will never look to another ally and deny your vengeance. Do you hear me, Matic of Parsath, son of Ran Merrick, rider of the Burning Plains? Do you trust that vow?
Though his jaw clenched again so hard that she knew not how his teeth didn't shatter, he gave a short nod. She looked to Vela. What task would you ask of me?
To destroy the destroyer, said she.
Yvain's breath stopped. In disbelief, she glanced at Matic to see his response. All fury had left his face. He stared at Vela, and his expression was one Yvain recognized. It was the same one he'd worn at the stream with dozens of revenants approaching. She'd seen no fear in him then as he'd commanded his warriors to form a defense, only fierce determination. The same fierce determination that filled her too.
So he is returning?
He is already returned, Vela said. His army has landed on the sunset shore.
With a full continent between that shore and the western realms. So there was time to prepare, so little time, but more than none.
5 years it took for his army to march that distance.
So it will again.
Only 5 years? Her breaths came fast and shallow.
How do I destroy him? With my arrow?
You may try that.
In the endless ages that I have lived, I have seen gods felled by less. But the task I require of you is in forming a strong alliance to stand against him.
Blindly, Yvain found Matic's hand and curled her fingers around his.
We will. Already we hope to purge my father's and brother's corruption and to strengthen—
Not the alliance of Parsath and the Five Realms, daughter. That will serve as the heart, but it is a heart already formed. You are imagining a puddle. I task you with an ocean.
The bottom dropped out of her stomach. You ask me to unite the Western Realms?
Vela nodded. That might be strength enough to stand against him.
Might. Yvonne could hardly catch her breath. With 5 years to prepare.
With no years to prepare. The Destroyer and his army are 5 years distant, but already his poison is here. It has never truly left. Instead, that poison festers and waits, foul seeds planted a generation past, so that he can reap the harvest on his return. And it is poison designed to weaken any attempt to stand against him.
A poison that festers and waits and weakens an alliance. Sour bile shot up Yvonne's throat. My father? Nothing did Vela say. Perhaps for the same reason she'd given Torek no easy answer. Some must be discovered, not told. But Yvonne thought this journey had already given them part of the answer. And my father has in turn corrupted my brother. Now Ezel courts Stranek's dark power.
No, said Vela. You think of the wrong brother.
Which one? All but the youngest, Tizen, had been influenced by her father. But Lazen was dead, so was Cezanne. If not Ezel, that only left one brother, Bazir, who had a clever tongue, but was also selfish and indolent. Yvonne could imagine of her brother many evil things. But all of those cruelties would bring him pleasure, and courting a god's power required sacrifice and pain. Never could she imagine Bazir stabbing out his own eye to gain sight beyond what was seen, or castrating himself to gain immortality beyond a bloodline of children. Perhaps Bazir was even more clever than she'd believed, though, hiding a dark purpose behind his indolent mask. And now he sat on the Alliance Council. What better place to weaken them all?
Not Bazir, Vela said, as if hearing Yvonne's thoughts. The wrong brother is not yours, but mine. It was Enam's power that raised those revenants and whose poison I sense within the young warrior.
Horror gripped her throat. Ezel courts the sun god, as the Destroyer did? No answer again did Vela give, yet again their journey gave answer enough. Ezel had raised a whip tail. They had known such a feat required more power than a priest of Stranixfang had, yet they assumed her brother's blessed bloodline had strengthened him. Yet he courted Enam, and meant to assist the Destroyer. I accept your task, Yvonne said, her voice as raw as her heart. She'd already meant to see her father and brother dead. She'd known they were monsters among men. She'd not known this. Turning his hand, Matic interlaced his fingers with hers. A gentle squeeze gave a silent promise of support. But of course he would support her in this. Of all people, the Parsathians knew that to defeat a monster they must stand together. Vela glanced at their linked hands, then crooked a finger at Matic.
Bend your head nearer to mine, warrior, so you may better hear what I have to tell you.
Something the goddess wanted no one else to hear. Vela leaned near enough that, as she spoke, every breath passing through her veil was a cold breeze over Yvonne's cheeks, but not a whisper of sound came to her ears. Matic began to shake his head, as if in denial. Then he became absolutely still, body rigid with tension. A few more words from Vela wound that tension so tight that his great form quaked with the force of it, sinews and tendons taut as steel, clenched muscles of his jaw twitching. He lifted his head as Vela drew back, and Yvonne knew not what she saw in his face then. Fury seemed not hot enough. Determination seemed not iron enough. Denial seemed not arrogant enough. Only clear was his rejection of everything the goddess had said. Again Yvonne slapped her palm over his mouth. Yet this time she was not so certain he meant to speak. The way his volcanic stare burned as he looked at Vela, she thought the goddess must be hearing every word he did not utter.
You had best continue your lessons, then, said Vela now, with light amusement.
In a sweep of billowing black robes and frigid air, the goddess bent to retrieve a small clay pot from the ground, the jar the cockmonger had dropped when she'd prostrated herself. Opening the lid, Vela stirred the milky oil with her shining finger, then breathed in the scent before closing it again. To Matic she held out the jar.
And you will likely have need of this.
His mouth flattened, and a dull flush climbed his cheeks. Sick tension gripped Yvonne's heart, for even she recognized the insult the goddess gave. But Matic was not a fool, and only a fool would refuse a goddess's gift. He did not let go of Yvonne, but using the arm he braced beneath her legs, he opened the hand that had been gripping her thigh.
Vela placed the jar in his palm. As soon as his fingers curled around it, she looked to Yvain.
You came to me for a blessing before your moon night, and with these words, a blessing I give to you. You are stronger than you know, she said. Whatever strength you imagine you have, it is as you imagined the sea. You'll find it is so much more than you believed.
Yvain's throat closed. Thank you, my lady, she whispered. The goddess smiled, and her cold stone fingers drifted down Yvain's cheek. With her voice of icy steel, Vela commanded,
Now look to the northern gate.
The glow vanished from the priestess's skin. Black veil concealed her face. Warm palm cupped Yvain's cheek. Vela's silent presence again filled the back of her mind. Immediately she looked to the north. They were not near enough to the edge of the bridge. From the center of the square, the wide Agaras River was in view, but not the city walls or gates.
To the horses,
Matic commanded. As one, the warriors rose, as did their mounts. With swift strides, Matic crossed the distance and lifted Yvain into the saddle before springing up behind her. He turned the horse north, carefully weaving through the body still kneeling and prostrate. The clatter of hooves across cobblestones joined the rising voices of the astonished crowd. Some ran after the Parsathians, as if also following Vela's instruction to look north, or desperate to see what the goddess wanted them to look for. Yet Yvain knew. Even before they reached the edge of the bridge, where the Agora sparkled below and peered toward the northern shore, she knew what came.
It is too far,
muttered Keeler, shading his eyes from Inam's glaring sun.
I see the wall, but not the gate. Dana?
Who had the keenest vision of all the warriors.
I see the gate, she said in hard frustration, but only the shape.
Not the people who passed through it?
I see a merchant in yellow robes leading a wagon into the city.
But not the soldiers Yvain thought to see, unless they'd already come through the gate and were out of sight behind a building. She turned her gaze beyond the gates, and her heart froze.
Soldiers approach on the northern road.
How many?
Maddox's voice was grim and unsurprised. They rode four abreast. She counted the rows.
Two full companies flying the Alliance Council banner, followed by eight horsemen wearing the seal of the Ruguzian Royal Guard.
Maddox's body stiffened behind her.
Only 200 mounted soldiers to retrieve a stolen bride?
Keeler scoffed.
The council must have thought Matic was alone when he captured you.
His joking lifted Yvain's heart only slightly.
My brother Bazir rides at their head.
Sudden astonishment arched Keeler's brows, but it was Dana who exclaimed,
You can see that?
They could not. She looked in hope for Tizen, too, but if her younger brother was among their number, he was not in her view. She returned her gaze to Bazir and the man who rode beside him. The shape of his beard marked him as hailing from Tola.
Does the council minister Gareth have blue eyes and a scar upon his left cheek and a scorpion sigil on an opal ring?
He does,
Matic said. Then the Tolehi minister also rides with them.
Which might act as a curb on her brother, but only until Bazir found his way around the other minister. So how could she find her way around Bazir? Her mind raced even as Matic turned to the others.
Bannock, ride at speed with Yvain to the docks.
No, she said. In Drum we'll stay and together we'll stop my brother.
His response was a snarl.
We can purchase 200 arrows, my bride, but I will not whip your arm to shreds while we fight them.
We need not fight them at all, and if you attack Bazir and kill him, the Alliance Council will declare war upon you and Parsath. You will tear the Alliance apart in the very moment I have been tasked by Vela to strengthen it.
Abruptly he buried his face in her hair. His broad chest heaved against her back. His voice was low and rough against her ear.
I have taught you that a warrior must sometimes run when faced with a threat she cannot defeat. That is what you will do now. But we cannot all run, not if you are to survive. A ship is no easily defensible position. Instead, my warriors and I will find one within this city and leave no soldiers alive to pursue you.
And likely die, too.
Silver-fingered Rani comes for us all,
he said gruffly.
But she will come for more soldiers than Parsathians this day.
She will only come for my brother,
Yvain told him, and when she heard his grunting dismissal of that declaration, she sharpened her tongue.
You must stop thinking as a warrior, Matic, and instead think as a king. But if you will only be a warrior, then I remind you of the first warrior's lesson you taught me. Make use of what you have.
Like cold iron, he became. Utterly rigid, Matic held her in a hard and silent embrace.
What do I have?
You have me, Matic. Jalen's daughter, as cunning and as vicious as my brother. But that is not all I am.
So if you will not be a king this day, then at least be a warrior who makes use of what he has and follows the lead of a queen.
For a long moment, Matic didn't reply, his body as taut as when Vela had whispered into his ear. Then he rasped,
"What is the Queen's command?"
Chapter 25. Matic. The Queen commanded them to seek protection from a Gogian prince and a cower behind palace walls, walls that provided not even comforting defense. Drom had no fortress or citadel. Instead, the prince who governed the city resided in an opulent manse overlooking the sea, and instead of walls, the parlors had great open archways that led to balconies and courtyards, with breezes moving freely through every room. Had he been a visitor instead of a warrior who stood in an archway overlooking the wide avenue that led to the palace gates, watching for the approach of 200 soldiers, Matic might have reflected that if a man must live behind walls, then an open and airy palace such as this would be an acceptable compromise for a warrior born on the burning plains. Instead, he only imagined how quickly soldiers might scale the private balconies and invade a visiting queen's rooms. A foul curse came from inside the parlor behind him. Bannock paced in front of one of the few doors they'd yet seen in this palace, a closed door, with Yvain on the other side.
"I mislike that she is alone with him,"
the old warrior said fiercely. Alone with Cadus, Drom's governor. A lowly position for the brother of the Gogian queen, yet one of his own choosing, for he had not wanted to shoulder the duties of a prince living within the royal city. Or so his brother Orin had told Matic. But when Matic had said the same to Yvain, warning her that such a prince would be unlikely to stand firm against Bazir or the Alliance Council, she had replied, "Cadus's only fault is that he stands so firm he breaks before he will bend." After leaving the bridge, the speed at which they'd raced through Drom's streets prevented any more discussion, nor had they the opportunity to speak after reaching the palace. Despite their swiftness, news that Vela had appeared and shown favor to a woman with moonstone eyes and a party of Parsathian warriors arrived before they did. Just as well. Without Vela's favor, Cadus might have doubted Yvain's claim that she was Nyset's heir. The prince might have looked askance even at Matic, a Parsathian who claimed to be the commander of the Alliance's army, yet who led only 6 warriors. Instead, Cadus himself had greeted them on the palace steps and agreed to Yvain's request for an urgent audience with him. That audience had at first taken place in the parlor where the Parsathians waited now. There, only a few more words had passed between Yvain and Matic when she'd quietly asked whether she could make spoken reference to his mother. He had not cared if she did. She could say whatever she wished. Yet although she made reference, little detail had she given. Cadus had listened with increasing agitation as Yvain told him that her father had poisoned her mother, then imprisoned her in the tower. She told him of her own years spent locked in that chamber until she'd sent a letter to the Burning Plains, and that her father had killed Matic's parents when they'd arrived to judge her worth as a bride. In broad strokes, she recounted how Jalen had lied to the Alliance investigators, and that Yvain had truly been the one to kill her brother Lazen while Ran Ashev made her attempt at escape, how Jalen had bundled her off to Tola to be wed, and how she'd sent a message to Matic that had led to his ambush of her carriage, where she'd killed her brother Cezanne, and that she and Matic had agreed to marry, so they might remove her father from Sissia's throne, but had been forced to travel through Gog to avoid the soldiers in pursuit. Little the prince had said until she'd finished, and little he'd said after, except to request a private audience with Yvain. Matic could not fault the prince's caution. In the presence of 7 Parsathian warriors, a woman in fear of her life might say whatever she'd been instructed to say. In private audience, Cadus could make certain Yvain was with Matic by her choice and offer his protection if she wasn't. Speaking to her alone was a wise decision. In Cadus's place, he'd have done the same. Yet still it took all of Matic's control not to tear open that door and see for himself that she was well, to roar at the prince that she needed no protection but his. "She is alone, but not helpless," Ardal said, to the pacing Bannock, though until Matic looked at her, he thought it might be directed to him. "She has her dagger."
"And is no stranger to using it,"
Fassad added with a grin,
"as her brother discovered."
Bannock waved that away.
"We should have given her more lessons with a blade."
So they should have, but a blade would not save her from 200 soldiers. With a snarl, Matic looked through the archway again. Nothing yet. He turned back to the warriors. Only he and Bannock were on their feet. The others lounged around a table laden with fruits and roasted meats, eating their fill, as Yvain had told them to, because after her brother arrived, they ought not trust any food or drink that they had not bought themselves.
"When we are settled here,"
he told Keeler,
Secure our passage on a barge ship and take horses and provisions aboard.
His mouth full of prickle fruit, the warrior nodded. Keeler had thrown a multitude of questioning glances at Maddox since leaving the bridge, yet he hadn't questioned Maddox's decision to seek help from the Gogian prince. And he hadn't known it wasn't Maddox's decision, except in Maddox's decision to follow her lead, because Yvain had spoken fiercely to him about being a warrior or a king, yet not so loudly the others could hear. They only knew that after a fiery conversation with her, he'd altered their plans. They would follow him into a battle or into an opulent palace. But he could see Keeler's relief that another option was still available to them, one that did not depend on the protection of a Gogian prince. A prince whose character Yvain knew well, a character that did not match what Orin had described. There was a clear resemblance between Orin and Cadus. Maddox might have known who he was even without introduction. The two princes shared the same brown hair and wiry frame, the same broad nose and narrow face. Yet Cadus had a quiet and thoughtful manner Orin did not. And knowing now how the Gogian queen had once admired Jalen's methods, Orin's description of his brother as weak might only have meant that Cadus had refused to crush unhappy farmers. And his only fault was standing so firm he might break rather than bend. His only fault.
Rann Maddox?
Keeler raised an amused voice, watching him with a laughing gaze.
Do you think a fool's thoughts?
All of his warriors regarded him in the same manner. Because he was snarling to himself, and all but tearing through the floor as he stalked again to the archway. Because Yvain had brought them to the palace of a man that her mother had chosen over Maddox, the palace of a man the goddess Vela had urged her to consider. Yvain had vowed she would not seek marriage with another. Maddox trusted that vow. Still, poisonous jealousy ate at him. He needed no counsel for that. He knew they were a fool's thoughts. The warriors were no fools. They'd heard Vela speak of a suitor who lived in this city. It was no great leap to guess that the goddess meant Cadus.
You heard Yvain's vow?
He asked them, and when they nodded, that was all that needed to be said.
I have no reason for jealousy.
Keeler's eyes narrowed.
What were Vela's words to you?
Words? They'd not been mere words. They'd been blades the goddess had used to strike through his heart. In bed and in battle, a warrior is too dependent upon his sword. Until you have the heart of a king, you will never truly have her, and you will never truly protect her, and because you lack a king's heart, you will lose her. Lose her, as he'd lost his parents.
They are words best left unsaid,
he told them hoarsely, and words best left unthought. He would not lose her.
Rann Maddox?
No amusement remained in Keeler's voice now. There was only the head of the dragon.
Do you need counsel?
Throat raw, Maddox shook his head.
Vela only tests you,
Bannock said, giving counsel anyway.
As the goddess does with those she favors, so they might accomplish all of which they are capable. She prodded at your jealousy and your character, but only because she sees all that you might be, as we do.
Maddox cared not if he was favored by a goddess.
And Yvain's suffering? Why prod her with a threat of pain?
Shadows crossed the older warrior's face.
It is not a prod. It is a kindness so that your bride will be prepared. A kindness would be to prevent it.
And if the goddess would not prevent it, Maddox would. Vela had claimed that Maddox could not truly protect her, but he would. He vowed it. Jaw clenched, he turned to the closed door, which opened before he took a step. Out came Yvain, wine goblet in hand, and a satisfied smile curving her full mouth, Cadus's robed figure at her side.
I will prepare a letter to my sister regarding your hope for a new balance between members of the Alliance after you have married the commander and secured your throne. I believe your proposal will be much happily received.
It is a proposal happily extended. She caught sight of Maddox and her brows arched, perhaps in query why he appeared ready to rip apart a palace with his bare hands.
Commander.
The prince approached him, reassurance warming his voice.
You have served the Alliance well, and I was very sorry to hear what befell your parents. I thought then the circumstances were strange, but trusted the council had resolved all questions. This new account of what occurred is quite troubling.
Troubling? Maddox gritted his teeth. His father murdered and accused of assaulting a woman. Troubling. His mother imprisoned and raped and beheaded. Troubling. Their two dragons executed and silenced. Troubling. His heart ripped from his chest and thousands of Parsathians grieving their queen and king. Troubling. Such words were as offensive as sly tongue. Not lies, but truth pale and thin, as if starved of conviction.
It was the speech of men who believed that truth had many sides, so they carefully walked in the center without committing to anything.
Given such widely different accounts of events and that your bride believes there will be an attempt to silence the truth, I offer you and your warriors my protection until this matter is resolved by the Alliance Council.
It would be resolved by Maddox's sword. Still, he nodded with gritted teeth, accepting that protection, even if it only lasted until they left by cover of quiet night and boarded a ship north. Yvonne came to Maddox's side, her hand curling possessively around his biceps.
I wonder if we might be given quarters separate from the rest of the household and guests.
From beneath her lashes, she cast a shy glance up at Cadus. For it is my moon night, and Ran Maddox's attentions have so far been quite vigorous, but if we have privacy, he will disturb no one with his bellows and grunts.
Of course, the prince smoothly replied over the Parsathian's choked laughter. We will celebrate the blessed event as we sup together with your brother and Minister Gareth. My attendants will escort you there now so you may bathe and make ready for their arrival.
Yvonne bowed her head. I am in your debt, Prince Cadus.
In his debt?
Only barely did Maddox stop his growl. His bride owed no one.
The honor of helping you is mine,
the prince said,
and that was truth at least.
But Maddox hated that she needed help from anyone but him.
Maddox's jaw didn't unclench until they reached their quarters. There, attendants and maids flitted about, preparing Yvonne's bath while Maddox and his warriors took measure of the security of the chambers.
Cadus had honored the request for privacy and separation. Their quarters were not within the palace at all, but were a separate residence called the Queen's Nest. Standing amid terraced gardens overlooking the sea, the structure appeared to Maddox not like a bird's nest, but more like a snail's shell, or the spiral seashells he'd seen in numerous decorations since entering Drom. Though rounded, their quarters were not built around a central chamber, but in a swirling layout that raised the floor a level with each turn, and the only route to the main bedchamber was through a circling path of parlors and chambers. And although the bedchamber opened to a wide balcony, it was more defensible than he'd anticipated. From the residence, only one door led into the chambers. From outside, soldiers would have to scale steep walls to reach the balcony at the apex of the nest. It was not secure, but it was as secure as could be had here. As he joined the warriors and his bride on the balcony, Maddox saw his satisfaction mirrored in the other warriors' faces. Yvonne stood at the balustrade, her gaze turned toward the sea, perhaps watching the ships sailing, for she'd never seen any before this day. Soon she would be aboard one.
After the soldiers arrive and are settled in the garrison, I will send Dana and Torek to the docks.
The soldiers won't arrive, Yvonne said, tilting her face up to the sun, her eyes closed. Such a large number are forbidden to enter the city without the prince's approval, and Cadus will not give it. Only my brother and Gareth of Tola will be allowed through with a small personal guard. Now his surprise and relief was echoed in the other warriors' expressions.
He will refuse the soldiers' entry through the gate?
Yvonne nodded.
Still, we will secure a ship,
Maddox said. She gave him a sideways glance. You do not trust Cadus's protection?
I do not trust your brother.
As I do not. Turning, she leaned elbows back on the marble balustrade. This night he will attack us in this nest and claim he saved me from a brutal rape at the hands of Maddox and his Parsathian guard. The warriors froze, eyes all locked on her face. That will not be his first choice. After arriving, he'll make an appeal to the prince, asking Cadus to hand us over to the Alliance Council so they can conduct a new investigation. That would be simplest for him, as he could kill all of you on the return journey to Ephorn. But Cadus has given a vow of protection, and he will not rescind it. She looked to Maddox. So this is what Bazir will attempt instead. As it is my moon night, my brother will think you too distracted between my thighs to prepare a proper defense against the Ragusian guard. Then Bazir will tell his council he killed you while defending himself and his sister in a royal house. Sharp pain knifed through Maddox's chest.
That is what Jalan claimed that my father did, made him into a rapist and an oath-breaker.
And suffered no consequences for it, not yet. She nodded. Bazir will claim that you were taking your vengeance against me, since you were forbidden from touching my father or my brothers. It will be easy for him to persuade the council of that view. All too easy, because that view had once been truth, though Maddox wouldn't have raped her, only thrown her skinned corpse over the Sisian wall. Ardal frowned. The prince knows you intend to marry. You think Cadus will not be murdered too, and his death laid at the feet of a vengeful Maddox and his dragon?
Yvonne asked her. Bazir will leave no one to tell a different story.
But we will be prepared for his attack,
Keeler said. We will, and Maddock would be justified in killing him too, though there will be fewer questions if it is my arrow that pierces Bazir's eye. For if I kill him, Maddock will not be in defiance of the Council's order not to touch Jalen's sons. They need not know you helped me draw the bowstring. Sheer bloodthirst sharpened the smile she turned on him then. Cunning, vicious, a queen.
Leave us,
he told the warriors bluntly. So hot and hard he was, Maddock barely trusted himself to touch her. Instead, he crowded closer, gripping the balustrade at either side of her cocked elbows. Boldly, she held his gaze, head tipping back, never retreating, even though the rigid press of his body captured her within the cage of his arms.
So this is what I made use of this day.
Raw need roughened his voice.
A scheming and manipulative queen.
She grinned up at him. So I am. More than a queen.
And a warrior, finding a defensible position and planning your attack. You brought us here not for the prince's protection. You brought us here to give us an opportunity to destroy Bazir, but destroy him by using the very rules that he would abuse.
An aroused flush rose beneath her skin as she nodded. In this palace he has but three routes to victory. One is by persuading Cadus to turn us over to the Alliance Council, but Cadus has already offered his protection to us. The second is by overwhelming Cadus's defenses with the force of 200 soldiers, but it would be near impossible to justify his actions to the Council, so only treachery within the house remained. A harsh laugh shook through him.
My father used to say that wars were not won and lost on battlefields but in throne rooms. I never truly understood what he meant until this day. You have taught me a king's lesson without even trying.
Have I? Her brow creased in a small frown. I would not have taught you that wars are won in throne rooms. I would say that battles are won in throne rooms, just as they are on battlefields, but they are fought with tongues instead of swords. War or battle, it was a lesson well learned, and her tongue was so sharp and clever and quick. His gaze fell to her mouth. So desperately he longed for a taste, but never would she tell him if she was hurt, so Maddock only knew by her breaths whether he wanted too hard and took too much. Hand circling her waist, he lifted her atop the balcony's balustrade. Her fingers clenched on his arms for balance, but he would never let her fall from that seat. Perched on the railing, she was as tall as Maddock, her eyes on level with his. Her linen-wrapped thighs clamped around his sides when he pushed between them. After the ache of denying himself her kiss, no time did he waste taking another taste, pushing aside the front of her robe and revealing her breast. He should kiss and tease, but with ravenous hunger he sucked her taut nipple into his mouth. Always he wanted her too hard, too much. But her gasp was pure pleasure, her soft moan and the arch of her back a plea for more. That he would give this night. Releasing the engorged bud, he growled against the soft swell of her breast.
And the bed?
Panting, eyes heavy-lidded, she looked down at him. No reply she made. Because his mouth had erased the thoughts from her head, he realized with smug satisfaction. He kissed the glistening ruby of her nipple before reminding her of what this lesson had been.
Is the bed also where battles are lost and won? They are fought with swords and tongues.
She came back to herself with amusement curving her lips. Her two-fingered hand cupped his bearded jaw, her thumb caressing the smiling corner of his mouth. Perhaps it is, particularly if a warrior views a woman as a fortress with walls that must be battered down. His chest tightened. Vela had truthfully revealed what was in his thoughts, yet Yvonne seemed neither surprised nor angered, so well did she know him. But it was not only Maddock she knew so well.
How many suitors do you have?
Suitors?
You knew Cadus would stand firm. All depended on that, and you knew because your mother watched him, as she watched me.
Coolness slipped into her gaze. She did.
How many suitors did she prefer over me?
I have no suitors, Maddock. She sharply tugged at the point of his beard, as she did when she believed he didn't listen to her. My mother watched many people, some she considered as partners for me, some she did not, but none knew she observed them, and certainly none courted me as a suitor does.
Why not choose the ones your mother favored? Why not Cadus, if his only fault is that he stands so firm?
In hot irritation, she shoved at his chest. He moved not a bit. A fierce snarl curled his lips.
I stand firm, too. Whom did your mother prefer?
She set her jaw.
With a flick of her hand, she closed her robe, covering her breast, withdrawing from him. Madoc flicked it open again.
Who?
Her chest heaved on two sharp, angry breaths. Why do you ask? Did you not trust the vow I made with Vela as witness?
I do trust it.
Yet jealousy still burned in him, a poisonous blister. Jealousy he resented. Jealousy Yvain did not deserve. Jealousy that Bannock said the goddess deliberately prodded so that he would overcome it.
Vela gave me a lesson to learn. I need to have the heart of a king.
A heart that burned true, not because it was always afire with foolish jealousy. She sighed heavily. That might only mean she wants you to tear my father's heart out. He would do that, too.
And what manner of heart do you want me to have?
For a long moment she gave no response, only regarded him steadily. That is not the question a king would ask. It wasn't, as he well knew. It should not matter what manner of heart she wanted him to have, but what manner of man he wanted to be.
What heart will best serve my people?
Approval lit her gaze. My mother's first choice was Dagonal of Tola. The captain who had brought Madoc news of his parents and had stepped into command upon the lave, and who was also son of Gareth, the Alliance Council's minister and nephew to Tola's king. Truth forced him to respond.
Dagonal would have been a good choice of a husband and king. A fine warrior he is, clever and fair, and he would have helped you free your people.
He is too fair, said Yvain, and like everyone who had studied under Tola's monks, he favors reason and diplomacy. Madoc could find no fault with that.
Why not choose him, then?
Because he would have tried appealing to my father with that same reason and diplomacy, and while he attempted to find a resolution that avoided bloodshed, my father or brothers would have stabbed him in the back. That was likely truth, too.
And Cadus?
He is a man whose heart longs for justice, but whose head is bound to law. He has persuaded himself that if rules are followed, then it is the same as justice. So although he hates the route his sister has taken with Gog, he did not push against her, because he deferred to her position and her rule. Her word is law, but sometimes the only justice is burning rule and law to the ground. Madoc agreed. Yet now nothing he'd learned made sense.
Why would your mother prefer them, then?
Because they both suffer from the same flaw. They rely on diplomacy or law to provide resolutions, but she believed that I could prod them to action.
I believe you could have too,
said Madoc, and she smiled.
But you preferred a warrior, hot of blood.
Hot of blood, yes, and hotter of head. Her lip caught between her teeth before she added, but I could have found a hot-blooded warrior anywhere. For a time we watched the wandering king of Blackmoor until he pissed in one of Vela's offering bowls. You are not that hot-headed, even when she insults you. Or not that foolish.
Why then?
Her brows arched.
Why choose me over other warriors?
Many reasons, she said. Then nothing else for a breath, and he thought she might leave it at that vague response, until she added, but I decided during the campaign against Stranix Fang. Almost 10 years passed?
Because you saw me fight?
Because I saw when you didn't fight. I saw you hold out your hand. To the Farians. Instantly, Madoc could see them again, as he'd seen them countless times in dreams and nightmares in the years since. The priests had enslaved the savages in dark caves and left them to die in cavernous pits. Madoc had been only a captain in the Alliance army then, leading a small group of soldiers to make certain no more priests remained in the caves. Instead, they'd found thousands of Farians, half-starved and stinking, eating their dead to stay alive. The Farians were not human, though they shared similarities in shape and expression to the people of the Western realms, and the savages spoke their own language made of hoots and clicks. But they were only as similar as humans were to apes, and despite the rapes, never had been born a mix of Farian and human. He'd heard many different stories of their creation, that ancient human mothers drank Sylac venom while the children fed at their breasts, that a bat-winged ape had mated with an ice walker and their pale-skinned savagery was the result. Most stories claimed that they dwelled in cavernous tunnels within the fallen mountains until the god Hanan rocked the world with his fuckings, and then they'd poured forth from those broken caves. Madoc knew not what was true, and he cared not, because he could still see the crying Farian children, the desperation of mothers and fathers, and that they'd had no way to escape the pits. Until Madoc had reached down and helped them out. Dozens he'd pulled from that pit before his soldiers had found a rope to throw down, and there had been some too weak to climb,
so he'd been the first to carry them out.
My mother described it all to me, said Yvain quietly now, and how the Tolehi monk in your group had advised you to leave them to starve because freeing them meant they would begin attacking the southern realms again. Which had been truth, yet he'd given his orders anyway.
I have recognized the faces of Farians that I freed that day,
he told her now, his voice thick.
Children, then, grown later into savage enemies that I've killed.
I know you have, she said softly. But do you regret your orders to free them? He shook his head.
I cannot.
A small smile curved her mouth, and she cupped his bearded jaw in both hands. And I do not regret that being the reason I choose you. Had you given me cause to regret that decision in the years following, then perhaps I would have chosen Cadus or Daganel, but I have not.
You did regret it,
he reminded her,
the morning after I pulled at your tongue.
And no longer regret it again by evening. Her eyes were alight with laughter. Or perhaps I regret it until you put that stave into my hand. Take a lesson from that, Matic. I am also hot of head, but you only need to give me a weapon and I will forgive you almost anything. Perhaps it was not a wise lesson to learn, placing a weapon into the hand of a woman angry with him. But if it meant seeing her smile, he was fool enough to shower her in blades.
Is that why your mother disapproved of me, then? Because I freed the Farians?
No. Her amusement faded. She called you idealistic and foolish, but she also said you made the hardest decision that can ever be made, doing what is right and good while knowing how painful the consequences might be. But you did not make someone else take responsibility for those consequences. You were the first to volunteer to return to the lave and to mount a defense against them. So Matic had been. He'd felt no guilt for freeing the savages. He never would. But he'd recognized his role in what followed and had thought to give the southern realms time to rebuild their own defenses so they would not need a Parsathian army at their southern borders. That hope had been as strong as the hope that, when he'd held out his hand, perhaps the Farians would not see them as demons and continue their savage attacks. Neither hope had come to fruition. But hope had not been his reason for freeing them, or his reason for returning to defend the lave. Both decisions were simply what he felt must be done.
Why then did she advise you against me?
She drew a deep breath. You were certain you want to hear? He frowned.
Are they words best left unsaid?
I know not. I only know that they are not easy words.
I will stand firm,
he told her, and amusement flashed over her expression before she nodded. Her hand cupping his jaw again, she said, It was because you have never lost. Never lost? That made no sense. She must have seen his confusion because she tried again. You have never been defeated. And I do not refer to small competitions with other warriors. You are a fine sport, but you have never suffered true loss or defeat. That was what her mother had seen? Then Queen Visenne had not watched carefully.
I have lost warriors under my command. I have lost friends.
You have, Yvain agreed softly.
My parents,
he gritted out.
My queen and king, whom I loved with my full heart. Your mother was already dead when your father murdered them, so she could not have seen who I was in response to that. Do you think I have not lost anything?
I know you have lost those you have loved, she said, but have you ever been defeated? Chest heaving, Matic searched her face as if he might find answer there, but he could not think of a defeat, not a significant one. He rasped,
I have not been defeated. That is a fault?
It is not.
Then what reason?
You must remember, she told him, combing her fingers along his bearded jaw. My mother had seen Sissia crushed. She'd seen her beloved mother become a demon that she herself had to slay. She had seen Anumith the Destroyer bring everyone to their knees. And then she was poisoned and betrayed, a warrior queen born, but with her body so weakened she could only watch as my father razed Sissia's noble houses and as he ground our people beneath his heel. And in that time she watched everyone as they recovered from the Destroyer's march. She believed that was when you truly learned someone's character. After they'd been broken, when they lost someone they'd loved and everything they'd known was destroyed, when they'd been brought so low they might never rise again, and when they do rise, then whatever reason they find to keep going, to claw their way up, to crawl to their feet, she believed that reason would reveal who they truly were. She said that she didn't know who you truly were. Jaw clenched, he stared at her. Did he then also not know who he was? But he thought she did.
She had seen him in the Farian caves and had chosen him to wed. She had seen him in the years that followed as he commanded an army upon the Lave. And she had seen him now, full of grief and rage and vengeance. His throat was raw as he asked,
"Have you known defeat?"
A sad smile touched her mouth. "Over and over again. The only victory I have known so far is that I persuaded you not to kill me and finally had the opportunity to escape my father and claim my throne, and it is not even a victory yet in full."
"It will be,"
he vowed thickly.
"What made you rise to your feet again?"
"Love for my people, rage against my father." She paused. "Hope." All of which Maddox shared with her.
"Perhaps I have not known crushing defeat, but I have known difficulty and loss. I have known grief that tore my heart from my chest. If you must judge who I am, use that."
"The vengeance you pursue for your parents?" He nodded. "I think you do them honor," said she.
"But I might have done them dishonor."
He saw that clearly now.
"If I had torn the Alliance apart after they spent so much of their lives building it."
She said nothing, but the tilt of her lips and the thumb she slid across the width of his bottom lip said enough. And now she had been tasked to strengthen that alliance and to make it grow.
"How far did your mother see? How many realms have you watched?"
"Countless. Some near, some far."
"All the Western realms?"
She nodded again.
"That is why Vela chose you then. Because you know the characters of so many within those realms, as you knew Cadus. You know who will stand firm, who will only speak platitudes. You know who might already be corrupted, who cannot be trusted."
A laugh shook her. "I do not know all of that, and those who were corrupted have done well concealing themselves, I think." Still, her mother had seen so much, even that Maddox would please her in bed. When Yvain had first said so the night at the inn, he'd mistaken her intent and almost taken her tongue. Little thought had he given the claim beyond that. He had not believed it of much importance, yet Yvain had mentioned his ability to please her again today, had mentioned it to a goddess.
"One reason you gave Vela in defense of your choice was that I saw to your pleasure."
"So you do. I would not take a husband who did not." She bit her lip, not in shyness, he thought, but in hunger. "I like that you see to mine so well, even while you ease your own need."
Ease his need? Not yet had Maddox been able to. It mattered not how many times he tasted her. It mattered not how many times he spilled his seed. His hunger for her had not eased. Instead, it consumed him.
"This night I will truly see to your pleasure, Yvain."
He cupped her breast again, lightly pinched her nipple.
"But not as I have been."
Her breath shuddered. "No?" Fisting his hand in her hair, he tilted her head and bent his mouth to her rapidly beating pulse.
"So deep inside you I will be."
His name she breathed, a sound of pure need. With a growl of hunger, he tasted the delicate skin of her neck. She trembled in response, her fingers clutching his shoulders, holding him tight. Not as tightly as her cunt would hold his cock that night. His lips skimmed down her neck.
"So long and hard I will have you."
She moaned, arching her back in silent offering, her ruby nipples raised to his mouth. Against the softness of her small breast, he vowed,
"So many times I will make you spend."
"Now, Maddox," she pleaded, rocking her hips. "Please." Only the last could he give her now. Hungrily, he sucked her hardened nipple into his mouth. His hand glided up her silky inner thigh, and he groaned when fingers found her already so hot and wet. Perhaps he did not yet have the heart of a king, but that day, when his bride cried his name and came upon his tongue, he felt like one.
Chapter 26. Yvain. The trek from the Queen's Nest to the Prince's Chambers carried Yvain and Maddox through terraced paths, and then along the colonnades that served as open corridors through the palace. Behind them were Danaw and Bannock, serving as their guard for the evening. Riding a horse might have taken them to dinner more quickly than Yvain's slow walk, but a long bath had loosened her stiff knee, and she liked that the distance gave her more opportunity to prepare Maddox.
"Only eat and drink what is prepared in front of you," she said. "Or something that you have seen my brother also eat."
"You think he will poison me, though it might risk you?"
If she ate or drank from Maddox's plate and cup, as lovers often did,
nothing her brother did might surprise Yvain, but Bazir would not come all this way to kill her. A sleeping potion would make his plans easier, but what I've told you is good practice at any table. She felt Maddox's gaze upon her at that. She wondered if he had ever worried that he would be poisoned as he ate. She thought it was unlikely, not when so many of his meals were roasted on a fire in front of him. "Do not touch him or go near him," she said. "He's not likely foolish enough to attack you in front of witnesses, but he might risk a sly poisoned blade." Maddox grunted dismissively.
"Every time he speaks, he uses a poisoned blade."
"I think you underestimate how deeply that blade might cut. He will speak lies framed by truth so that the picture he paints is more believable."
"I know his sly tongue."
"He will try to provoke you into attacking him in front of witnesses. Do not let him."
"I will not be provoked."
"Tizen told me how you leapt over the table in the council's chambers." Maddox grinned.
"So I did."
Though she had thrilled to Tizen's description of Maddox's focused fury and Bazir's scrambling retreat, now worry held her in too tight a grip to return his grin. "He will use your parents to elicit a reaction here, too."
"He might succeed, but I am no brainless warrior, even, easily bestirred to violence. Leaping over the table was no impulsive attack. I had deliberate intention of killing him. When enraged, less impulsive I become."
"And more narrow-sighted. Focused and intransigent, and stubbornly married to his view." He gave her an unreadable glance.
"That is as my mother used to say."
Pain slipped under her breast, followed by anger of her own, because still he would not rescind his vow or accept that she had never lied to him. Firmly entrenched he was in the first view he'd had of her, a picture colored by his rage and grief, when he'd been so certain he saw the truth of who she was despite never allowing her to speak it. "That is not sly tongue," she defended hotly. "I have observed it for myself."
"So you have,"
he said with a wry smile.
"And my mother would have called it cock-brained, because a cock only has one eye and it is rigid when inflamed."
She knew he meant to make her laugh, but the lingering anger and pain would not let her. In silence, they walked along a colonnade overlooking the sea. Orange and pink stained the sky, mirrored in the waters below. So well she loved this palace. All was open. After many years in her tower, when Yvain returned to Sicia, she knew not if she could tolerate being always surrounded by walls again.
"What is your new perfume?"
Maddox asked suddenly. "A soap from the bath. Soft and fragrant with coconut oils." "You wore the silks?" For the prince had gifted them both with clean robes to wear. The turquoise silks she wore now had been sewn in the Gogian style, with tighter sleeves and layered skirts. Maddox also wore the new silks, but wore them as he had his red linens folded over his belt. Yet she had not expected him to wear them at all.
"For this night?"
he said. "For her moon night? Or simply because they attended a royal dinner?" He had bathed too and unbound his braids. His hair hung heavy and wet, as if he wore even more silk loose around his shoulders. In all that luxury he ought not look as dangerous, yet he did. He wore no sword or armor, but still an expanse of powerful muscle was on display, and his leisurely stroll seemed as quietly lethal as a long-toothed cat's. Flushed with heat, she looked forward. They were nearing the prince's chamber, so no time could she waste ogling her would-be husband, and another warning still needed to be given. She had not wanted to say this to Maddox, for he and the Tolehi minister were friendly and had served together in the march against Stranix Fang, yet it must be said. "Do not look to Gareth as an ally." Maddox's face darkened in a frown.
"He is a good man."
"He is, but he has spent at least a 10-night with my brother upon the road. We cannot know what poison Bazir has told him and how it will influence his view of us." His firm lips twitched.
"As your words have influenced my views?"
"I have told you nothing but truth." There his smile died, but he said nothing as they reached the prince's apartments. She was not surprised that they were led to the prince's private solar, where they could dine in a less formal setting than a royal hall. Cadus would stand firm, but he also liked smooth progression, and he would hope to ease tensions. The two Parsathian guards did not enter the solar and would wait outside that chamber until Yvain and Maddox emerged. Already present were Bazir and Gareth. With heavy heart, she saw that her brother had already worked not only on Gareth but also on Cadus. So different was the prince's manner. Still polite, yet now wary, he introduced her to the Tolehi minister, who regarded her in the same way. She had thought it would be Maddox whom Bazir would turn them against, but she should have known. As a disciple of Tolehi reason,
Gareth would be more persuaded by what was seen with his own eyes, and a brother would have seen a sister more than he would have seen an Alliance commander who had spent the better part of 10 years upon the lathe. Almost any lie Bazeer could say about her, however, that she was of unsound mind, prone to fantasy, that she was bloodthirsty and murderous, fell to fits and rages, and had been locked away for her own protection. Whatever the affliction of her brain that he chose, Bazeer would claim that her existence had never been acknowledged because a mad queen upon the throne would endanger all of Sissia and the Alliance. They were led out onto a balcony where a low table surrounded by plump sofas and cushions waited beneath an airy tent.